Welcome to the Joint Standing Committee on Judiciary. We have a series of public hearings this morning, but before we get started with that, as always, we will start with committee introductions, and I will ask Representative Lee to get us started.
Good morning. I'm Adam Lee. I represent House District 89. House District 89 is downtown Auburn.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Erin Sheehan, and I represent House District 132. That is downtown Biddeford.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Poirier. I represent House District 70, which is Skowhegan.
Senator Reckitt.
Anyway, my name is Lois Reckitt, and I represent District 122, which is the...
Good morning, and I'm Amy Kuhn. I represent the town of Falmouth and House District 111.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Henderson. I represent House District 78, which is Bethel, Byron, Milton, Hanover, Roxbury, and my hometown of Rumford.
Good morning and good afternoon in advance. I'm Steve Moriarty from District 110, which is Cumberland, Long Island, and Sheboygan.
I'm Eric Brakey, Senator for the people of Androscoggin County, representing Auburn, New Gloucester, Poland, and Durham.
I'm Ann Carney. I represent Senate District 29. That's South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, and some of Scarborough, and I serve as the Senate Chair of the Committee.
And I'm Matt Moonen. I represent the part of Portland and serve as the House Chair of the Committee. And with that, and we are joined by our committee clerk, Susan Finette, and our committee analyst, Janet Stokoe. And with that, we will begin our first public hearing. That will be on LB 609, an act to ensure an incarcerated individual's right to make free telephone calls protected by attorney-client privilege. You just need the sponsor.
Good morning, committee members, Chair Moonen, and esteemed colleagues. I'm Ann Carney, representing Senate District 29. I'm also a member of this committee and a member of the Right to Know Advisory Committee. And I'm pleased today to introduce LD 1603. This legislation was recommended by the Right to Know Advisory Committee. And I think that you heard a presentation regarding this a little bit earlier in this legislative session when the chair of the Right to Know Advisory Committee, the Honorable Tom Harnett, spoke to this committee. The Right to Know Advisory Committee takes up issues that have been presented to the Right to Know Committee through a variety of channels. And this is a particular issue that came up. Actually, I am misspeaking. This legislation came about as the result of an interim study committee, which was the committee to ensure constitutionally adequate contact with counsel. And one of the focus of this committee was to deal with this challenging situation in which attorneys and clients who were incarcerated were unable to confidentially communicate because the Department of Corrections and Maine's county jails have a procedure for recording phone calls between residents of those facilities and others for secure legitimate security purposes. But what was happening in addition to the legitimate security reasons for recording those phone calls was that the system was also recording confidential communications between attorneys and their clients who were residents. And what was happening was that there were some instances in which there were violations of the attorney-client privilege. And then as persons who were incarcerated attorneys began to learn that some calls were being recorded, there was sort of a loss of faith in the system, and that also impeded frank and communication between attorneys and clients, even if the calls weren't being recorded. And so we set about trying to remedy this by having this interim study. And what we learned through that interim study was that there are a couple of different companies that provide this recording service, and that with regard to the Maine Department of Corrections, it seemed like they actually had you know, there was one company providing services to all of the correctional facilities, and that there was a pretty good system for making sure that conversations between lawyers and their clients were not being recorded, but that with regard to the county correctional facilities, there was a bit of a patchwork of approaches, and there wasn't one kind of consistent policy that everybody was aware of and everybody could comply with. And so, for example, from an attorney's perspective, they were dealing, if you dealt with clients in four different county jails, you had four different systems, none of which you really understood in detail. And so there was no way to be sure that you had adequately registered with the system such that your phone number would be taken off the list of numbers, well, would be put on the list of numbers that were outside of this reporting system. And so we had a really great discussion over a series of meetings to come up with a fix. And the big fix was to create uniformity among uniformity of policies and procedures throughout the county jails. And so I'm just going to go through the bill and comment briefly on each of the major changes that are proposed. And I will apologize because I did not, unfortunately, have time to review this morning, but I believe that section, part A of the bill, section A3, I believe is an amendment to the laws pertaining to the Maine Commission on Indigent Legal Services. And Janet is nodding her head. Thank you, Janet. And basically it assigns a new responsibility to the commission, which the commission was very willing to take on, which is that they would maintain what is essentially kind of a parallel system that's a backup system, which is a registry of the names, telephone numbers, and contact information for attorneys who provide legal services to people who are incarcerated, and then regularly transmit that information to all of the correctional facilities so that there is a way to kind of update those lists and keep them current so that we ensure that all of the numbers that should be on that do not record system are accurate and up to date. So that was the first suggestion. The second suggestion was focused on compliance with developing policies and complying with them. And so that basically directs the Attorney General to adopt a statewide written policy for protecting attorney-client communications in these between employees and agents of the Attorney General, and then to provide training on that. Section A7 is a prohibition on use of improperly intercepted attorney-client communications. And then if you flip ahead to section, and I'm hitting the highlights, section A11, that is another directive to standardize policies, as is section A12. And then if you jump ahead to section A15, you will see that that is yet another provision regarding standardizing of policies. And again, my apologies that I was going to duck out during our first hearing to prepare my testimony on this. So my apologies for not being able to be more specific, but I'm happy to answer any questions you have. And yeah.
Thank you, Senator Carney. Questions from the committee. Representative Moriarty.
Mr. Chair, good morning, Senator Carney. I have several questions, but I won't do them all at once.
Okay.
Starting on the first page, section A-3, in the second sentence, is the Preferred Commission a reference to NCILS?
It is.
So that raises a question for me, and that is, what about criminal defendants who have retained
counsel? Yeah, we talked about that in the committee, and the commission felt that there was enough of an overlap. This is not necessarily kind of a one-to-one correlation, It is basically an effort to capture kind of the criminal defense bar in general. And MCILS was interested in taking on this role, volunteered to take it on, and they felt that they could easily do this with respect to criminal defense counsel, to the extent that there are counsel who provide criminal defense but don't participate in MCILS. They felt that they could capture that information.
So perhaps we'll be doing from them later this morning, but I just wonder how the commission, on top of everything else, which has been provide data on a weekly basis.
And so they're actually not tracking the relationships. This is capturing the universe of attorneys who provide legal services to people who are incarcerated. So it's not actually a one-to-one correlation. It's a list of attorneys who are, it's a list of the contact information for attorneys who are that universe of attorneys who provide services to people who are incarcerated. And just for your information, they already have a list and they've been doing this on a voluntary basis to some extent. And so they felt like they could easily take this on if it weren't included in statute, and they were really anxious to make sure that there was this kind of backup system for ensuring that whatever list the jails and Department of Corrections is working with has the most current attorney information that's possible.
So to piggyback on Representative Moriarty's question, so if you have an attorney who's not in CLS, it's really just as simple as capturing their phone number once and making sure that phone number is on the do not report system. Is that right?
Yes, but say a phone number changes because somebody changes law firms, then, and that's where this is really important, or if an attorney gets a new cell phone number, they can provide it to MCILS, and then MCILS will update everyone in the system, the county jails and the different branches.
Right, but because it's just a one-time capture or maybe a periodic
or an update,
it's not a constant churn of
exactly
trying to track every relationship.
Exactly.
Senator Brakey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you speak to the purpose of the underlying policy that we're trying to carve out the exception for? Why? What's the purpose of reporting inmates' phone calls in the first place? We're trying to build on top of that, so I'm trying to understand. I'm sure that's probably a long-standing policy, but.
Yeah, so what we learned in the course of this study committee is that phone calls between people who are incarcerated and those and others are recorded routinely, and notice of the recording occurs every time the phone call commences. But basically the purpose of the recording is for security. If there's subsequently discovered that maybe there's contraband or something else is going on, or another crime happens outside of the correctional facility, there could be an investigation of the connection between someone in the facility and someone outside of the facility. And those law enforcement's investigation would cover those phone calls. Mm-hmm. And then in contrast, a conversation between someone who is incarcerated and their attorney is subject to the attorney-client privilege, unlike those other phone calls to which no privilege or confidentiality applies.
Thank you. Representative Toon.
Thank you. Just as a technical matter, if your phone number is on that list, does the technology automatically disrupt the recording, or does the person have to?
It would disrupt the recording.
Sorry. Representative Reckitt.
My first comment is not what I was asking a question about.
follow-up that's not a follow-up. I would say the other reason that they're recorded, as I recollect, as a general rule, is that sometimes there are threats made to the victim, people are connected with whoever they're consuming the data or whatever. Sometimes we that's the one that I guess.
Yeah, thank you.
The question I had is that I understand, I think, that the Attorney General is to write, develop a training program on this issue. To me, developing the training program is half of a piece. The other half is who's going to deliver this training program. I mean, it's are they going to train trainers in the jails, or are they going to do all that training across the state? Just a little concern.
I'm going to have to read this a little carefully because it's been a while. And as I said, I was hoping to prepare this morning. I believe that we talked about it being incorporated in the training that's offered by the Maine Criminal Justice Academy, but I can definitely bring that information back to you at the work session. We did, in all of our discussions on this topic, we spent a lot of time wrestling with the details of how could we come up with uniform policies, and most importantly, how could they be implemented? Because we recognize that the real point is to make sure that everybody's doing the same thing at the level of when these phone calls happen, to make sure that they're not reported. And we did take care of that, and I'll dig into the details and get back to everybody on it.
Then Moriarty?
Mr. Chair, next, a couple of questions. I'm looking at section A-8. Two questions regarding the Board of Trustees of the Criminal Justice Academy. Senator, am I reading this correctly? That the four recognized tribes select a single representative who attends and participates on their behalf?
I'm sorry, can you ask the question again? I just didn't hear you.
Well, the language of references to four recognized tribes by name, and it seems to say that as between all of them, they select just one person to serve on the board. I'm just wondering if I'm reading that correctly.
Yeah, I can just, I want to address 8A in general first, because I think that context is important. So there's 8A makes one specific change to the Board of Trustees for the Maine Criminal Justice Academy. Excuse me, and that is to add a person who is an attorney who represents defendants in criminal cases. So that's the only change in the composition of the board, and it increases the numbers from 18 to 19. The change with regard to the Mi'kmaq Nation is a wording change, because this statute, which did already include provisions for representation of the Wabanaki tribal governments, used an outdated name for the Mi'kmaq Nation. And so that's really just an update, but there's no change in the actual composition related to that specific language update.
What is the rationale for putting a defense attorney?
This, the work that this committee did kind of made that leap out at us, that this communication with counsel problem is something that attorneys for people who are incarcerated have a really unique and important perspective. And because that perspective wasn't kind of part of the Board of Trustees of the Criminal Justice Academy, this issue never percolated to the surface and became a priority in the way it would have at the board level had there been the voice of a criminal defense attorney on the board. And we realized that in this case, with particular respect to this issue, and probably a wide range of issues, the perspective of the board and their decision-making process would really be enhanced by having a criminal defense attorney on the board.
Senator Breaking?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In section A7 of the legislation on page 2, the section on intercepted attorney-client communications. So this seems to lay out if these communications were intercepted, that they would be not admissible in a criminal proceeding, and also that any person who accesses, monitors, reports, copies, transmits, or receives a communication be disqualified from participating in an investigation, from appearing as a witness. My question is in A and B there, where it says subject to it meeting the circumstances and meeting certain criteria. It says that the jail would have had to have actual or constructive notice of the attorney's name, and if the communication involved the use of a telephone, the attorney's telephone number. So it seems to suggest that, the way it's written, if I'm understanding it right, that if an attorney-client conversation happened over a telephone, but that number had not been kind of included on the list, or the jail had not had advance notice that maybe the cell phone number had changed, it would seem to me that you could determine after the fact that this was an attorney-client conversation, but it falls outside the parameters of this. Maybe this is more kind of something to look at for the work session, but is that intentional to exclude that? Or is that an oversight?
That issue is addressed in a different way in this section A7. If you look at the very last paragraph, it says that this does not, this provision, this remedy for an interception does not limit the applicability of other provisions of law or the main rules of evidence. And so say somebody, an investigator, sort of inadvertently started to look at a transcript of a conversation and then was like, oops, you know, I didn't know. And there was no way they could have known, say it was a new number that the attorney just initiated that day. Then maybe the sort of core section wouldn't apply to exclude both the communication and the person from the investigation. Right. And yet there could be an evidentiary ruling that that information would not be admissible.
Okay. So then I guess for the work session, I'd like to know kind of for things that fall out of these parameters, what, I'd like to make sure at very least that would not be admissible in a criminal proceeding. I see your point that if it was completely accidental and there was no notice, maybe you don't need to bar the person from participating in the presentation.
And Senator Brakey, I would just encourage you to take a look at the report. If we did, it's in your folder and you'll see it's kind of a hefty report, but we did really dig deeply into this issue because there were different members of the committee had very different views on what the remedy should be. Some people wanted a much stronger remedy in order to have a heightened deterrent effect, and others wanted to sort of stay with the type of evidentiary ruling that would come about through a hearing, a motion in limine type hearing. And so a lot of that discussion is already contained in that report.
Okay. Thank you. I'll be sure to do some light reading.
I hope you find it interesting. It was a very interesting discussion.
Representative Lee?
With respect to the report, I was wondering if perhaps for the work session, if we could correlate the sections of the bill to the recommendations and start at page 29, because we have specific books. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, no. Saying none. Thank you very much, Senator Carney.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience with me this morning, everyone.
Are there any legislators present who wish to testify on this bill?